the glass and left corner to Aginla. Aginla left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot saved. Made by all. Aginla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Right, let's get it going. Happy Thursday. Another week almost over as we get this hour of Flames Talk underway on a Thursday. It is March 20th, and with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, my name is Pat Steinberg here at our Groundworks downtown studio. Hello, Vix.
Oh, how's it going? I'm giggling because I finally got this mic position exactly how I wanted it.
Okay.
Like half a second before you threw over.
Very good to hear.
Well, we're on a roll. It's going to be a good show.
Well, hey, as long as it's going to be a good show, then I'm happy. We got lots to talk about this hour on the program. Daily Flames Roundtable in the back half of this hour. It's the Flames and Devils Thursday night in New Jersey. And another chance for Jacob Markstrom to face his former team. He did not get it done when the Devils were in Calgary on November 1st. He allowed 2 goals on 31 shots. Dan Vladar was the goalie that stole the show that night as he posted the shutout in a 3-0 Flames win over New Jersey. And now they face each other in the return match at Prudential Center. So we talked about this. What, that would have been November to December, December to January. It's about like almost 4 months ago when the Flames and Devils last played. And we talked about it then, and it was still pretty fresh. That was the first time Jacob Markstrom had returned to the Saddle Dome and the first time that the Flames had played the Devils since last summer's trade that sent Markstrom to New Jersey. But now, ask the question again and get into the conversation again. Flames Talk's available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Text line's open at 960-960. Now that almost a full season has passed for both the Flames and the Devils, how do we feel about the Jacob Markstrom trade now? The Flames are more than 3/4 of the way done their season. The Devils, after this game on Thursday, will only have 12 games left. This is game 70 for New Jersey, game 68 for the Flames. How do we feel about it? How do we feel about the deal that sent Jacob to New Jersey after 4 seasons as a member of the Flames and Kevin Ball and a first-round pick come back the other way? Because I'm more interested in this from a Flames perspective because I don't think New Jersey will ever look at this as a loss. They had wanted Markstrom for months, probably about a year, and finally landed him last summer. And Jacob was their guy. And he's having a decent year. He's got a 902. He's 22-13-5. He and Jake Allen, who they acquired instead of Markstrom at last year's trade deadline, those guys have really solidified the Devils in net and a huge reason why New Jersey will be going to the playoffs almost certainly this year. So I don't think New Jersey will ever feel like they shouldn't have made this deal. But from a Flames standpoint, they get Kevin Ball and a first-round pick in return. I do think it was a different deal that was on the table at last year's trade deadline. I don't think Ball and a first was what was on the table at last year's deadline, but I think what they end up getting, and I'm not exactly sure what, I know a first-round pick was involved, but I don't know what else at the deadline. But they get Ball and they get a first. And I don't know. I think that 67 games into this deal from a Flames standpoint, I think you like it quite a bit from Calgary's perspective. You get a multiple first round pick, multiple picks in the first round at another draft. And you've got a guy that it feels like you can build with for quite some time.
Well, you've got an age appropriate defenseman who's your third best on the roster currently, undisputed. And again, in his mid-20s, so it's a building block, it's a foundational piece, and we can debate at a later time what his ultimate upside is, Kevin Ball's upside is, when the Calgary Flames round out their defense and get it to a point where it's deeper, it's probably at a point in its development curve where you're more confident 1 through 6, but you also get that first-round pick, as you mentioned, which potentially is in the late teens. And that's nothing to be scoffed at. That's perfect for a team that's in a retool, managing to add a player that can help now and adding a draft pick that'll turn into a player that can help later. But for me, the most important piece of the Jacob Markstrom deal, trading a 34-year-old goalie, getting those two assets. But he also got the roster spot that was easiest the route anyway. And I'm sure the Flames would have found a way to do it.
They opened the door.
They opened
Wolf,
the door for Dustin Wolf.
Well, now there's no. Even if, like, say they traded Vladar and Markstrom's still here, it's not just the roster spot. It's the fact that it opened the door for him to win a number one job, right?
Yeah, I don't know necessarily if we're in a situation in Calgary where, despite how great Dustin Wolf has played, if your other goaltender is Jacob Markstrom instead of Dan Vladar, I don't know if we see a situation where Wolf potentially plays 50 games this season. So not only are you acquiring a first-round pick, an age-appropriate asset that is your third-best defenseman, you've also opened things up for your 23-year-old stud goalie who, by every metric, as you laid out on Flames Talk on Wednesday in our Calder debate, is top five in the NHL, not just rookies. Yeah.
And I that's kind of what I wrote down. Like, it also opened up the door for Wolf. And that was the kind of third thing that they got in the deal. They got the first, and you know, that'll probably be mid to late-ish first-round pick when it's all said and done. Like, New Jersey isn't going to – it feels like New Jersey is locked right into third.
Third in the Metro.
Like, I don't think they're going to be tracking down Carolina, although could happen, and I don't think they're getting tracked down by the Rangers.
But if they meet Carolina in the first round, doesn't that feel like a first-round exit, which would put it in that 19 to 22 range, depending on what happens in the other series?
I don't know, Vix. I don't believe
you don't believe in Carolina. This isn't Hurricanes talk. This isn't Devils talk. I apologize.
I love Rod Brindamore. I love what the Hurricanes are all about. I love the way they play. They don't have the guy that swings the balance. As much as I love Aho and I respect the try to go get Rantanen, I'm sorry. And I think Stankoven's going to be a stud, but I think that they had, from Natchez to Rantanen to Stankoven, for a team that is trying to win a Stanley Cup, the multiple first-round picks are great, but are you trying to win a Stanley Cup? And did you get worse from Natchez to Stankoven with a 13-game stopover for Rantanen? Yeah, if you ask me, you probably did. Right now, you got worse.
I've only got one sentence in that. New Jersey is walking wounded right now with the names that they're going to be missing for the remainder of the season.
Hughes, Hamilton.
Sways it significantly for me. Back to Flames talk.
And I hear you, and yet New Jersey's still finding ways to scratch out games. They've got good goaltending. Point being is that, they'll probably be somewhere in the 19 to 21 range when it's all said and done.
Which is always the question mark. When you're bringing a first-round pick back and trading the best player in the deal to the other side, you're strengthening that team and worsening your pick. So the fact of the matter is, if you can be in that late teens or early 20s for the Flames while dealing your number one goalie the other way, That's not insignificant.
Well, I mean, Kevin Ball's a former second-round pick, and on top of that, it has turned into a bona fide top-four guy on your team. And I think on a lot of teams, he would be pretty steady as a top-four left-side defense guy. And so, you know, that's...
Put it this way, if he's in your bottom pair, you've got a really deep defense.
For sure, for sure. And so you get those two pieces, and you open the door for Dustin Wolf to come in and be the guy. I think you look back at the deal if you're the Flames and feel like it's a pretty good one. I think you look back at it and say, yeah, we would make that deal again as well. And, you know, I don't know if they expected Ball to be as much of a fit as he has been. And I do think that pairing with him and Rasmus Anderson has definitely taken some steps back and has not been as ironclad and automatic as it was in the first couple months of the season. But we're still talking about a guy who's playing 20-plus minutes a night, pretty reliable. We talk about his stick checks and all that type of stuff. So I think that you're quite happy with what you're getting from Ball. And we're talking about a guy that I think the Flames are happy to sign to a long-term extension here. And if there is the desire on the Ball side of things to sign a long-term extension for a guy who's, 24 years old, you know, now you've got a guy who feels like is part of this thing for the long run, and you got that all for a guy who very clearly didn't want to be here anymore.
Well, and if you even get significantly deeper on the blue line, and that pushes Ball down the depth chart, he's still proven he can play up in your lineup. Should you run into injury issues, should guys go slumping, he's a guy that can slot through all three pairs when you're at an optimal defense. And I didn't know that he would be that guy coming into the season when that deal was made last summer. Ball for me was a relative unknown. And yes, he had played a 82-game schedule in New Jersey. The Devils had a lot of injury trouble on their blue line last year as well, so kind of a reoccurring theme for them. But it was almost like an asterisk where, okay, but where would Ball be in terms of games played, in terms of minutes played, had the New Jersey Devils not had significant injuries to their back end? And so when he comes to Calgary, okay, it makes sense that you would naturally pair him with one of Anderson or Uyghur, and turns out obviously Anderson for the bulk of the season. I didn't expect him to necessarily flourish as much as he did. So, yeah, I wonder if the first-round pick was a priority for the Flames, and it turns out that Ball is probably more significant than that first-round pick, to be perfectly honest with you, because the hit rate on a 18 to 22 or 23 overall pick, I think you'd be thrilled if you got a Kevin Ball at that spot. If you got a guy that you know you can play 22 minutes a night on your team at a mid to late first, that's a win. That might not be a home run, might not be a first line center at that spot, but you're coming away happy that your guy that had a 50-50 shot at playing 200 NHL games is a 22 minute a night blue liner.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that you're quite happy with the way that everything has panned out. So on the Ball front, he is restricted at the end of this season. I've talked about kind of a six-year deal, maybe a five-year deal, somewhere in that range if you want to lock him up starting this summer, and I still think I'd be comfortable doing that. Either the number would have to be right. It would have to be something that you're feeling good about to go that long. But if you could get him for, I don't know, something in the 4.5 to 5.5 range for 5 or 6 years, I think that you're quite happy with that if you're the Flames. And I think that for a guy like Ball, who's never had a contract like that, and the stability that it gives him and the opportunity that he's been given with the Flames, I think that that's a nice ballpark at a fair range on the player side as well. Like, I'd be perfectly comfortable, because I don't think Ball is going to be, do I think he's your long-term left side number one defense? Probably not. But I do think he slots in as a pretty solid number two left side guy. If at some point you're able to find a left side guy via the draft or somewhere else that can slot in and be that. So I think you're quite happy on a 5 or 6 year extension for a guy like Ball. And I was pretty okay with going down that road a number of months ago. And here we are on March 20th and still feel that way.
So you're somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 times 6 years?
Yeah.
5 mil?
Yeah. 6 times 6 years, 5 million.
That's $30 million guaranteed for a guy that has yet to have, to be fair, job security. So from a player perspective, the only thing that concerns me is there might be a lot of players, and more specifically agents, balking a little bit at long-term deals right now with the cap set to shoot up, and there's probably going to have to be some sort of market reset or balance as to what a tweener, first pair, second pair left defenseman might make. And I think there's arguments that, okay, he's getting this elevation because of the lack of depth on the blue line, so on and so forth. But from a player perspective, it guarantees me $30 million. Knowing that you're never going to be a high-end point producer, knowing that you're going to be relied upon in a lot of more defensive situations than offensive situations, so you're not necessarily having a 100-point Erik Karlsson season to boost up your price. And at the same time, from a team perspective, you know that this guy can play 22 minutes a night and not be completely swimming. I think somewhere in that ballpark would work for both sides. I'd probably lean more 5 than 6 from either side perspective, but I mean, at that point, we're just splitting hairs, and I'm being semantics Vickers, so I'm going to avoid that.
I mean, who knows what? I mean, again, Ball's still fairly young in his NHL career. Who knows what else might be accomplished here? And
what's
what
the old adage? 400 games, 500 games for a defenseman?
Is that really what they say? I don't know. I've never
heard
that.
Until you've fully rounded out who and what you are at the NHL level. I can't remember if it was even a Daryl Sutter-ism or if it was just a general sort of cliche that gets tossed out there.
Well,
Kevin
if it was
Ball's nowhere near that.
If it was Daryl, it's probably about 1,000 games. Until you're
Touche. And you know what? Maybe I just completely made it up. I don't know. I feel like it's something that I've said or that I've heard before. But Ball's at 206 as of Thursday.
And he's played one full NHL season.
This is his second full NHL year.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to limit his ceiling, because he's still got, again, a lot more runway to go. He's very inexperienced in the grand scheme of things. So maybe there is an elevation in his game too. But if,
and he's like, I still think there is more that he can do with his frame. Like, we're talking about a very large human, right? And I think that just comes with more time and more, you get more comfortable and like, oh, you hit a guy harder. And, oh, he's mad at me, but I can deal with that. Like, you just probably, and having never been in Kevin Ball's shoes, I can't say that for sure, but I do think you see that over time. Like,
I would be a miserable jerk if I was 6 foot six. I'm already a miserable jerk.
230.
But I digress, and also had NHL talent.
A little bit more offense.
I would be a bully.
A little bit more offense that we're talking about than maybe we thought.
You've seen this nose. It's taken a punch before. I'd be right in there.
You're from the mean streets of Grand Prairie.
Yeah.
You really want to talk about you as a defenseman in the NHL, hey, if you were 6'6"?
I just would be a miserable word that I'm not certain I can say on the air.
We can spend the rest of the segment talking about that.
Let's not. That's something a little more entertaining, perhaps.
Yeah. And all that to say, I think you look back at the signing of Jacob Markstrom to a $36 million. I think you look back on that deal, you're pretty happy with it because you got four pretty good years out of Markstrom. He was your no questions number one goalie for four seasons. He obviously had the incredible year in 21-22 where he finished as the runner up for the Vezina and almost tied Mika Kiprusoff for the franchise record in single season.
Did he have
shutouts.
Nine at like January or something? And then
no,
just
it was
get
nine. It
home?
Was nine in March, but March was much late earlier that year because we started later that year just because of the whole pandemic situation. But that year, yeah, he had nine and had like 20 games or so to go to tie or break Kipper's record, and
felt like he was right up there early and never managed to get across the finish line. But I digress. Yeah, I don't, like, it was a good signing. I would argue he gave you 3 out of 4 quality years. There was that 22-23 season where he had an 892 the year after the Vezina, and everybody was up in arms about what happened to, I guess he would have been, what, 32-ish at that point? The fact of the matter remains is he was your undisputed number one for 4 years, and then with 2 years remaining on his contract, he got you what right now is a top-pairing defenseman and a first-round pick, and then opened the door for your... your new number one goalie.
Hey, if Siggy's listening, Jordan Sigalette, the director of goaltending or senior goaltending coach, like they talk about ladders, right? They talk about how they want to set their, hey, this guy's at the top of the ladder, getting set to be replaced by that guy, and this guy's a little further down, and you try to keep filling the rungs in here and there, try to make sure that your ladder is set. Well, this one worked out pretty well because they had Dustin Wolf in 2019, pandemic hits. They signed Markstrom in the fall of 2020. October 2020. That was free agency that year. And then Markstrom comes in, gives him 4 great seasons, gets a little bit of time with Wolf at the end, and then baton passed, and Dustin Wolf has taken that mantle. So, ladder worked really well.
Not so much like when Kiprusoff retired, and then it was a decade almost, probably 8 years of searching for a number one. Mike Smith in there, Brian Elliott in there, Chad Young. There's too many to really run through the names of that. But yeah, like talk about perfect timing. Dustin Wolf's arrival is literally right on time from the departure of Jacob Markstrom.
Which is also a reason why I think the Flames were a little more willing to go down that road and engage him and potentially, you know, even at last year's trade deadline, talk about the potential of moving him. And I know it didn't end up working and it got a little strange there, but what else we got here at 960 or what, not what else, what do we have here at 960? Let's get to the text line for the first time. You can't say what else when you haven't read the text line yet.
Well, my favorite, whenever players, you ask them the first question.
Like I said.
Like I said. Huh?
When?
What? Was it? Am I late? I'm pretty sure I was standing here waiting for you. Dion, like I said.
Dion was the king of, like I just said. You're like, no.
No, it doesn't
no,
work here.
No, you can't say that because you didn't just say that.
If this was question two and it was a repeat of question one, you're clear. But this is question one. Doesn't work that way.
Like I just said. No, you haven't said anything. I wasn't listening to the conversation you had behind closed doors, Dion. Talking about Dion Phaneuf, of course.
There's only one Dion, unless you're a big Celine fan.
And who isn't, honestly?
Touche.
Just because we're here and now I have to do this.
Right now I'm focused on playing hockey and keeping on going in the right direction with our team here. First and foremost, that's what I'm focused on, and the other stuff that will take care of itself.
Okay, good clip from Dion Phaneuf there. Always appreciate his insight. What do we got here at 96960? This reads, it was a no-brainer. Markstrom wanted out, and this allowed the Flames to see if Wolf is good or bust, and he is good. Every team in the NHL with hindsight would make this trade all day, every day, and the Flames have arguably the best backup goalie in the league when obviously talking about Dan Vladar. I do think Markstrom wanted an opportunity to go elsewhere, did not want to be a member of the Flames anymore. Basically told them at the end of last season that, yeah, I think I've played my last game here. Please try to trade me. New Jersey was going to be the end destination the entire time. And it worked out. They ended up getting him to New Jersey. And they got a pretty good return for him. And I agree. That was a no-brainer when it was all said and done.
Do you think Markstrom posts the numbers that Wolf has this season if he's still here in Calgary? I'm just going to quickly pound through a quick comparison here. 902 save percentage at all strengths for Markstrom. Wolf is 11th at 912. 909 save percentage 5-on-5. That's 32nd in the league. Wolf is third overall at 932. 812 high danger save percentage 5-on-5 for Markstrom. That's 30th. Wolf is second overall at 870. And goal save above expected. Markstrom's actually minus 2.34 5-on-5, 35th overall. Wolf is fourth at 19.31. You think it's a systems thing, a structure thing? We hear Woodley talk all the time about how goalie has a period of adjustment when going to a new team. So I'm not sitting here suggesting
that. Or maybe Wolf's just having a better season.
Or maybe Wolf's just lighting it up. Like, I'm not certain Markstrom comes back to Calgary and puts up the numbers Wolf has.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that either. And I'm a big Markstrom guy, and I was his entire time here. But and I think he was I think that Brad Treliving hit a home run on that by signing Markstrom 6x6, because what it did was give them goaltending, give them a number one, and give them time, to hand over to Dustin Wolf. And I thought it was a home run at the time. Even though they only get 2/3 of Jacob on that contract, I still think that it was the right call.
Well, and I don't think you're sad that you only got 2/3 of that contract done in Calgary, because you flipped him at a point where he was at, I don't know if I'd necessarily say peak value, because that would have came in his Vezina season, but we just spent 20 minutes talking about how you still managed to get a guy that's in your top pairing and a first round pick plus an opportunity for your new number one.
This reads, Vladar best backup. Jonathan Quick might have something to say about that. There's a few other pretty solid backups out there. Laurent Brossoit is having a pretty good year. Jake Allen is maybe...
Jake Allen's numbers are better than Jacob Markstrom's.
Kevin Woodley will join us to kick off hour number two. And I think there's going to be a lot of Jake Allen love in that conversation. But Vladar, especially recently, has been very, very strong. This says, I'm happy Markstrom is gone. This reads, Joey McDonald took the mantle from Kiprusoff, guys. Talk about a ladder. Yeah, it was not quite the same. This has worked out much better.
Yes.
This reads, 6x5.75, somewhere in the ballpark. I would love that for Kevin Ball. Very nice.
Oh, that is my favorite text of the week.
Cannon Carstairs says, most importantly, Edmonton didn't get Markstrom.
That's true.
That's a good point from Cannon Carstairs. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for a Thursday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary airport. It's Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and now joined by Derek Wills to complete our Thursday Daily Flames Roundtable. Let me read you this text to kick things off from Daryl at 96960. It's a good way to frame our Daily Flames Roundtable. This came in. We didn't really even talk about this in the first half of the hour, Wilsey, but this text came in before we even got started from Daryl. It says, guys, I'll get the show started for you. Why Wolf tonight? Vladar posted the shutout the last time they played New Jersey, only got a few shots on Tuesday against Toronto and got the win, but yet they jump back to Dustin Wolf. I don't get it. It's the inexperienced AHL coach that is making the wrong decision. So we know where Daryl sits on this topic as to what I'm about to ask, but I'll ask the two of you, and we can weigh on this to kick off the Daily Flames Roundtable. It is going to be Dustin Wolf back in net against the Devils on this Thursday night after Dan Vladar got the win against Toronto on Tuesday. In our minds, is it the right call to go back to Dustin Wolf?
Can you ask me in like 4 or 5 hours?
No, you gotta say it before the result.
Okay. I mean, to address Daryl directly, I think it's a fair question, although I don't think it's a fair comment that he made about Ryan Huska, who is literally not an AHL coach. He is an NHL head coach and deserves to be one. I'm not sure why the Flames bench boss has been taking so much heat from some fans of late, but it's a conversation for another day. But it's a tricky one for me because, yes, Dan Vladar was perfect in game one of the season series versus the Devils and was as good as he had to be in that 2-1 victory over the Rangers a couple of nights ago. I mean, Flames gave up a season low 13 shots on goal. And, you know, they scored early in that hockey game. And Dan Vladar didn't have to be great after that because the Rangers weren't very good in that one. And the Flames were. But he still stopped every single shot that he faced after that first goal went in and gave the Flames a chance to battle back and win that hockey game and pick up two important points. So I really wondered when I got to Prudential Center for the morning skate today, who would be in the starter's net. It was a question mark for me for a couple of reasons. Number one, Vladar's performance versus the Devils in game one of the season series way back on November 1st. And number two, how he played in the victory over the Rangers two nights ago. But I thought there was probably a 60-40 chance they went back to Dustin Wolf. I do think there's a pretty good chance that after Wolf gets the start tonight against the Devils, that Vladar will get the start on Saturday afternoon against the Islanders. Although I think that's probably still to be determined. If Wolf has a really good game tonight and the Flames win, I could see them going back to him again and giving him 3 or 4 starts. For me, this isn't about how Dustin Wolf played on Monday night against the Maple Leafs. The Flames were horrible in front of him, especially on the penalty kill. And their penalty kill was on a heater before that game against the Leafs. And then they go 0-for-3. And Wolf didn't have a chance. And Ryan Huska has said a couple of times since that game that him getting pulled, and he was the first Flames goaltender to get pulled in a game this season, it wasn't on him. It was about getting him some rest because he's going to be playing a lot down the stretch. It was about giving Vladar a chance to get in there and face some shots because he hasn't played a ton of late. So I was torn, guys. And Daryl, I think it's a fair question, but I don't feel strongly one way or the other. If Wolf plays well tonight and gets both games to wrap up the trip, great. If he doesn't play great tonight and they go back to Vladar on Saturday, I'm fine with that as well. But, you know, I think both goalies are giving the team a chance to win right now, and that's what's most important.
Yeah, to your last point there, Wilsey, I don't think there's a wrong answer to this question, to be honest. I wouldn't have been outraged if either goalie was in the starter's net this morning. Vladar did have a shutout, as you mentioned, against New Jersey in his last outing. To counter that, Wolf is your distinct number one, and by most metrics is a top five goalie league-wide this season. I'm not surprised that it's Wolf after Vladar only got 13 shots against the Rangers. Had Vladar stopped 30 of 31 and Calgary had won, I could see more of an argument there. But I don't think that there was necessarily a goalie that could have been in between the pipes for this game where I would raise my eyebrow and go, I can't believe Ryan Huska chose goalie X over goalie Y in this scenario. And it is good, though, that this is an actual question you can ask. It's a debate that can be had, because there was a stretch where Dan Vladar wasn't giving you quality starts, and we saw Dustin Wolf carry the load, probably too much of it, to be perfectly honest with you guys, from December to the Four Nations break. But since that Four Nations break, you've gotten good goaltending from both. Wolf is 3-3-2 with a 2.58 goals against and a 9.10 save percentage. Vladar is 2-1-1 with a 2.04 goals against and a 9.20 save percentage. So it's good to be back to this point where you can debate who should start and who should be backing up in a situation like this. Fact of the matter remains is I'm not going to argue one over the other because coin flip. And again, I don't have any outrage if either goalie starts against the Devils.
Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm on an island. I don't know. Like, I don't think there is much of a debate at this point. Like, the only time I'm not starting my number one goalie in the teeth of a playoff race is when I feel like he needs a rest. And like, to me, there's no longer a debate. As well as Vladar has played, what Dan has done is given you a little bit more, at least in my eyes and in my opinion, what Dan has done has given this coaching staff a little bit more confidence in trying to or in putting him in spots where they feel like they can get Dustin Wolf some rest. But guys, I in my eyes, this has turned into, over the course of the season, a 1-2. This is not a 1A, 1B in my mind. And so as such, it was the second half of the back-to-back. And of course, Vladar played on Tuesday and played well on the 13 shots that he stopped and did his job. And awesome. He's been much better over the last four or five starts. But the plan almost certainly was Wolf, Vladar, Wolf. I don't know why you would deviate it at this time. Like, so for me, it is Wolf's your number one. Wolf goes when he's fresh and with 15 games to go and you're fighting for your playoff lives with no guarantee you're going to make it. You've got to play your best lineup. And unless Wolf isn't, like, unless he's dealing with fatigue and isn't properly rested, like, for me, 10 times out of 10 right now, Wolf is the guy that gives you the best chance to win, and Wolf is the guy that's in net if you're going to be icing your best lineup. So, yeah, I thought it was like 100% the right call to go to Wolf, but I think that's because my mindset has changed in that it's not really a conversation. This feels like now that we're into the backstretch of the season and the Flames in a playoff chase, like, this feels like they've got their number one. They play their number one when he's fresh and ready to go.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. There is a very clear number one and a very clear number two when that's not how the season started. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dan Vladar got 16 of the first 30 games. Dustin Wolf got 14 of the first 30 games. If there was a 1A and a 1B in the first 30 games, based on usage, Dan Vladar was the 1A and Dustin Wolf was the 1B. But, and I've said this a number of times, guys, I think the way the Flames have handled 23-year-old rookie goaltender Dustin Wolf this season is one of the reasons they're in a fight for a playoff spot. They haven't overloaded him. They've given him breaks when he's needed them. I think the only time where maybe he could have used a break and they didn't give him one was going into the Four Nations break when he looked tired in the last few games before that 2-week break. But other than that, I think they've done an outstanding job bringing him along as slowly as possible, because I'm sure they've been tempted to play him even more with the way he's played. I mean, he's got great numbers. He should be a finalist for the Calder Trophy. Maybe he even gets some Vezina Trophy votes. So he's their clear number one guy. And I'm anxious to see if he plays well tonight. Does he get the start on Saturday afternoon? What would you guys do?
I mean, if he plays well tonight, I absolutely don't mind giving him three of the four starts on this road trip. And you've got 2 days between games before you host Seattle next Tuesday. So I'm not worried about the workload aspect of it. I did wonder if you were going to go 2-2 on this road trip with Vladar's past success against the Devils and how he's basically played coming out of the Four Nations break, if that would have been a Vladar spot. But that's contingent on if you were going to go 2-2. But if Wolf comes out and has a really strong performance, I don't hesitate to throw him in against the Islanders on Saturday.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Vickers, didn't you say Vladar was going to get three and Wolf was going to get one?
That was contingent on making more than 12 saves against the New York Rangers. And also, I didn't definitively say that.
You need a repair on your truck. I'm not hearing the beeping noise as you're backing up here. I need to.
I didn't specifically say. I said I could see the scenario.
I know.
However, I said it was going to be 3-1.
Who was getting three and who was getting one?
Thank you, Wilsey. Thanks for throwing me under the bus and then lifting that off me.
Yeah, I rescued you. Yeah.
Class act.
I would only go, honestly, because I do think rest and managing Wolf is important. Number one, I would stick with whatever my plan was. So if my plan was 2-2, then unless Wolf allows no goals against New Jersey, then I would be going to Vladar probably on Saturday. The more that I think about it, I would go 2-2 because this is a lot of hockey in a short period of time. And that rests up Dustin for when he's been at his best. He's got one of the best home ice goaltenders in the NHL. And so you've got some time at home coming up with some rest. So I would go Wolf in this game, probably, unless Wolf is spectacular and you feel like you've got to get him back in against the Islanders. I would go Vladar against New York and then be ready to go heavy Wolf on the homestand is probably how I would look at it going into the next couple of games here.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Pat. I mean, if Dustin Wolf is just okay tonight and the Flames don't win the hockey game, I think I'd probably lean Dan Vladar on Saturday as well.
Yeah. Well, it's it was interesting because I
he's lost
that.
Three in a row.
He has. Yep, he has. And I thought it was like that was my topic. I sent that to you well before Daryl sent that text, and then I was like, "Oh, that's a great way to open up the conversation because it's exactly what we're talking about." It's Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Thursday edition of your Daily Flames Roundtable. Guys, what do we make of Connor Zary's? We talked about Zary returning to the lineup and what it could do for the Flames, and now he is back in the lineup coming off the two-game suspension. What do we make of his return on Tuesday against the Rangers?
I thought he had a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde game, guys. I would say more good than bad, playing on the left side of the Kadri and the Kids line again with Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil. I thought that line had some really good moments. As a matter of fact, I thought all of the lines did some good things, although I know you guys disagree with me when it comes to the threesome of Yegor Sharangovich between Joel Farabee and Blake Coleman. But again, conversation for another time. But I thought he looked pretty good in that game. He did pick up an assist. He had four shots. He did have three giveaways, so maybe tried to do a little bit too much at times. One takeaway, one block shot, played 17 minutes and 23 seconds. And I think it was a good baby step in the right direction, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a little bit tough. I will say this. It's a little bit tough to evaluate based on the level of competition faced. Because yes. I think collectively we all agree the New York Rangers were junk in that game. So when you have a team that's going and a team that's not, maybe you got to grade on a scale a little bit. But I thought he showed plenty of jump in his return to the lineup. You mentioned Willsey, four shots. That's one shy of his NHL career high of five, which he's done twice. Ironically, one of them has come against the New York Rangers. Don't see them very often, but apparently likes to fire the puck at Shesterkin when he does get the opportunity. Two high danger chances for basically everybody except that Sharangovich line was significantly positive on the Corsi front, so I'm not going to necessarily give him a check mark there when you're, again, grading on the curve. And he was also playing with the team's best center and a rejuvenated Martin Pospisil, so that's certainly going to help as well, as is coming off rest. I mean, there's a reason he was so energetic to start the game. He had plenty of energy to go. He hadn't played in two games. But you know what? Full marks for him. It was, from my perspective, one of his better games in the calendar year 2025, and it's just on him to continue to build that momentum as he continues to get reps after sitting for two.
Yeah, it was actually like the thing that was most positive about Zary coming back is that, okay, they put that line together and we'll see how much longer that stays together. No reason to break it up after what they did at MSG. They were great. The two top six lines, I think, finished 12-1. I think it was 5-0 the Kadri line when they were out there 5-on-5 on high danger chances, and 7-1 for the Frost line. So like, yeah, you're keeping those six together all day. You're keeping and understandably keeping the whole forward group the same going into this game. And so I thought that you saw him pretty early on. It felt like for the first time since the injury that like he really added pop to a line. And part of that was probably because he was feeling like there was something to prove. Felt like he maybe let the team down by taking that suspension and having to miss games. So he had a lot of energy and a lot of pop coming back into the lineup. And he, I thought, contributed well to the first goal that tied it and got the Flames back in that game. And Yeah, and then the rest of the game, you're right. Like, it's hard to judge too much on any individual performance the way that game went. But I felt in the first period for the first time since he missed all that time with an injury that Connor had that jump and that pop. So it was a positive one. And if they get that on a more regular basis, much like we've talked about with Martin Pospisil recently and Matt Coronado, another, like, if they can get that a little bit more, might do just a smidgen of help to their offensive woes. So that was encouraging to see against the Rangers.
I actually think it would be more than a smidgen. I mean, Connor Zary, and we've talked a lot about it, fellas. I think if he wasn't the most dynamic offensive player on this team prior to the injury, he was certainly top two or three. I'd put him up there with Nazem Kadri, I guess Jonathan Huberdeau in his own ways. But I thought he was outstanding prior to that knee injury. And you look at his totals this season, and he's been pretty good. He's a half point a game guy, which is not bad for a sophomore in the NHL. But I still think there's plenty of room to grow for Connor Zary. And you know, a question I asked Ryan Huska at media availability at Prudential Center this morning is, hey, if you look at shooting percentages, and I get that shooting percentages, at least for me, are a combination between skill and luck. Good players tend to have higher shooting percentages. Teams with a lot of good players tend to have higher shooting percentages. But I also think that there's some luck involved, and Ryan Huska said as much in his answer to my question, and he thinks there's more goals inside of his dressing room, and I do too. You know, whether it be Connor Zary or former Devil, Yegor Sharangovich, or even Rasmus Anderson, who hasn't had as good a season offensively, even though he's been, you know, I think trying to play a more significant role defensively with the departure of Chris Tanev, I think there's more goals in that dressing room. So we'll see. The good thing about these new combinations, guys, if this game doesn't start the way the Flames want it to, I would not be at all surprised to see numbers 10 and 91 back in the same line together. I think you can go back to some old combinations if these new ones don't work.
Yeah, and just to touch on your comment on Zary, I think in the calendar year 2024, specifically from this season, the numbers that Zary put up didn't match the nights where he looked like Calgary's most dynamic player far and away. Yeah. So I do think there is some positive regression, some progression, if you will, in the actual goals, assists, points category for Connor Zary, because he was, for my money, probably the most exciting player on the Flames when the puck would hit his stick for the first half of the season.
All right, gents, that will wrap us up on our Daily Flames roundtable on this Thursday. Two down, two to go on this four-game road trip for the Flames, and we will do it all over again on Friday, 75% of the way through. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your Thursday. Thank you, Wilsey.
Before I go, guys, who are we cheering for in the other big game tonight between the Blues and the Canucks, who are tied for that final playoff spot in the West?
Not overtime would probably be the answer to that.
Not Flames, overtime for sure.
That's the only thing that I would say.
Maybe St. Louis, because they've played one more game than Vancouver has and two more than Calgary has. Does that make sense?
Do you want St. Louis to continue to feel good, though? They've won 7 of their past 10 and 3 in a row.
I want both of those teams to feel bad.
I just want everybody to have fun.
I just hope everybody has a smile on their face at the end of the day.
Sorry. I just sidetracked us there. Enjoy the game, guys.
Bye, okay. Wilsey. That'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Thursday. I'll read you a few texts at 960-960 on the wolf topic. This texter says, "You're such a wolf homer." Didn't know that was a thing, but okay. Didn't know that wolf was a place. Didn't know that you could be a homer for a person, but...
Wouldn't you be... I'm not.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I don't want to outdate myself by trying to reference slang that I probably don't know or use properly, or if it's even still in style. So
are you gonna TiVo the game? Is that me?
That's not where I was going, but thanks for that.
You got
drop
your sling box ready to go? Remember the sling box?
No, I actually am not familiar with sling box.
Jerry in Milk River says, "I'm not quarreling with the decision to play Wolf tonight. My issue is with everyone who has seemingly forgotten to offer Vladar the praise I feel he strongly deserves. No one seems to mention the difficult situations he's been asked to play. Second games of back-to-backs when everyone in front of him is tired, asking him to play well when he's not playing a lot of games. Why not just talk about the great tandem? Vladar isn't getting the love he deserves." I think that we've talked a lot.
I thought I gave him the Flowers?
I mean, I think Vladar has been much better over the last little bit, and he has been put in tougher situations and all those types of things. And it's pro sports. Like, sometimes it's not equal. I'll always go back to something Dave Dickinson once said, the head coach and GM of the Calgary Stampeders, said, yeah, you know what? I had to learn as a head coach that pro sports is fair, but it's not equal. And you know what? If you're really good and the team looks at you as the future, you are going to get more opportunities than another guy. And that's just the way it is. And yes, the Flames have not treated Wolf and Vladar equally this year because they look at Wolf and see him as the potential franchise goalie going forward. And so they, as with a rookie goaltender who they have high hopes for, they put him in spots that were more conducive for success early on and have put Dan Vladar in the harder situations. That is pro sports. He's the number two or the backup or the 1B or whatever you want to call him. That's life when you're not the number one guy.
Well, and it's not just that they see Wolf as the future, so they're giving him more opportunity. He ran with it when Vladar faltered earlier in the year. If Vladar was top five across the board in every goaltending metric, I have full confidence that he would be starting more than Dustin Wolf. It's not, to me, it's not even a this is the goalie of the future thing. He's the goalie of the present and the future. But to Daryl's point, Vladar since the Four Nations. That was Jerry's. My apologies. Vladar since the Four Nations, .931 save percentage, 5-on-5.
This says, I love that Wolf is starting, but win or lose, 2 p.m. start time on Saturday. Makes sense to go back to Vladar. I agree.
So with that, though, it makes sense to go back to Vladar, but you weren't surprised at all, and it should be Wolf from your declaration. But if you're splitting 2-2, how much do you factor in Vladar's recent body of work / his success against the Devils earlier this year when he shut him out?
I don't like too long of a layoff for Wolf. I don't like giving teams two looks at a goalie especially if a goalie gets a shutout.
Okay.
And also I think the plan would to go back to Wolf. Wolf, like, this is the spot where Wolf played on Monday. Why wouldn't he play on Thursday? Why would you go Monday to Saturday with your guy if you don't have to? I just think you're overthinking it. Not you, but I just think we're overthinking it as a whole if you're going away from Dustin Wolf.
I'm not upset with either goalie starting, so I don't really have a dog in this fight, per se.
Mark and Cena Caker says, my only counter to Wolf being a true one and getting all the starts is looking at the last road trip and seeing the great goaltending by Wolf with having some extra rest. So if you think Vladar has a good matchup, I think the extra rest will help Wolf for the remainder of the season. I do agree with that, which is why I would be going to Vladar on Saturday. That's another really good time to give Wolf just a little bit of time and a little bit of rest going into that game. Because again, you're going to be using Wolf more heavily on home ice on this next homestand. As we start to wrap things up this hour, thanks to Taylor and Cam, our outstanding producers. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you every single day by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport.